and welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Oksana Smerechuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. We're bringing you our feature interview with our host, Marta Dechok, who talks to political scientist Olha Onuch about the elections for the president of Ukraine. The candidates, their ratings, their strategies. Olha Onuch tells us what she has been observing as Ukrainians prepare to go to vote.
On Sunday, the 31st of March, Ukrainians are going to the polls to elect a new president. It's been a really interesting campaign. There are 39 candidates on the ballot, including a man who plays an ordinary person who gets elected president on television, and now he's running for president in real life. I'm Marta Dechok for Hromadske Radio, and with us to talk about this is one of the world's leading experts on Ukraine, Ukraine's politics, Professor Olha Onuch. She is a senior lecturer, which is like associate professor of politics at Manchester University. She's also an associate at Nuffield College, Oxford, and of the Harvard Ukrainian Research Institute. She was also a research fellow at the Davis Center at Harvard University, has many publications, books, and articles on Ukraine, does extremely interesting research, including some on this recent election. So thank you very much for finding the time to speak to us, Professor Onuch.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Let's start with the big picture. It's been a long campaign, and there's been a lot of international attention to it, but just let's do a quick recap of what were the main issues and who are the main candidates in this election.
Well, I think the interesting thing to think about here, what were the main issues during the actual campaign versus what were the main issues for Ukrainians over the last year, right? Mm. The election campaign wasn't really focused on issues as much as it perhaps should have been. Certainly, there was a lot of mention of corruption. There was a lot of mention of the war. But the actual policy propositions that were being lobbied by the various candidates are all over the place. Lots of populist rhetoric, lots of empty promises, much of the same that we've seen in some of the previous elections. So that was a little disappointing, I think, and it shows us, or it helps us understand why we are where we are today, which is almost in a complete deadlock in terms of the top three candidates. So although Zelensky is leading in the polls...
I'm going to interrupt you. Can you just recap who the top three front runners are?
Yeah, of course. No. So I was just going to do that by the three. But so the top three candidates would be Zelensky, who is leading in the polls with about 27.7%. That's data taken from the last joint survey by Keith Razumkov and Rating Group, where they put together all of their surveys. So it's about 15,000 people that were surveyed, and the statistical error, sampling error here is under 1%. So it's about 0.8%, which is extremely good. So these numbers are quite robust. So he.
So these are the top polling organizations in Ukraine that have been. Thank you.
And so Zelensky, yeah, so he has the 27.7, he's leading. And then this is followed quite closely by both Petro Poroshenko, the current president of Ukraine, with about 16%, and Yulia Tymoshenko, the former prime minister of Ukraine, with also just over 16% for both of them. Now, if we look at some other polls, the numbers are slightly different, but more or less they show the same thing, that Zelensky has a lead, but the lead is not huge in any respect. It's still within this place about 7 to 8%, that depending on the turnout can really change dramatically in terms of the outcomes. And Yulia Tymoshenko and Petro Poroshenko have been in a dead heat almost the entire actual campaign since the beginning of this year. So they are statistically tied, and they have been so only until the last surveys. So there was one that finished by Razumkov Center on the 26th. 6th of March, and then one that finished that was conducted by Keys on the 22nd of March, and both of those put Poroshenko in a very, very, very slight lead ahead of Tymoshenko by about 2%, and that is statistically significant. Mm. So,
can I ask you? Sorry to interrupt. Can I ask you about a few other candidates who have not been receiving very much attention in international media? And these are the candidates that represent the pro-Russian positions in Ukraine's political spectrum. A few polls that I saw earlier in the month were showing that Volodymyr Boyko and Vilkul, these are people who come out of the political party of the previous president, are actually polling in the top 10. So could you speak a little bit about those candidates? Because they're not in the top three, but they're still in the, sort of in a leading positions.
Well, actually, so Boyko makes it into the top five, which is...
Even higher than I realized. Okay.
Yeah, so I was going to move to him next. He polls at about consistently about 10% now. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you again. Can you remind our speakers a little bit about this candidate?
Boyko is representing pretty much the old Party of Regions party that now is defunct. He is perceived to be the main pro-Russian presidential candidate in this campaign. He has recently taken several meetings with high profile, both pro-Russians, Medvedev, including in the meeting.
That's the Russian prime minister.
Former prime minister, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Former president. And so he's clearly seen as representing this continuation of a very particular wing of the Party of Regions. The problem with his polling, right, it's about 10%. This is coming from a subset of voters that are highly unlikely to turn out in large numbers, and they are predominantly in the east of the country and in the south of the country. We know that they have not turned out for the past two elections in 2014, and they are also among the people who are reporting both high numbers of not being interested in the elections, not seeing the elections as changing the potential outlook for Ukraine, maybe even making the elections bringing negative outcomes to Ukraine, and they're just unlikely to turn out in large numbers. So we're probably going to see perhaps a slightly lower outcome for Boyko.
On election night.
On election night, yeah. Which I think is going to signal, support these feelings that people in the south and east, as well as the internally displaced people that have been forcibly displaced because of the conflict in the far east of the country. They have now been reporting in several studies, including Gwen Sasse's studies on the internally displaced, and Elise Giuliano's work, and several other people that have reported on, specifically looked on the Easterners and on IDPs or internally displaced people, and they have found that these people feel like they are left behind and that their votes don't matter, that the Kyiv is not listening to them, that certainly Poroshenko is not representing, the current president is not representing their interests. So I think they will be even less motivated to turn out, seeing that their top candidate is in fourth place and highly unlikely to enter into the runoff for the second round. And the other candidates that they may have supported, as you mentioned, are just not even going to make it even into the top five.
You've raised two really important points there that I'd like to jump in on. One is the voting rights of people who have been displaced. And what you said was very interesting, because they are the ones who left the Donbas area where the war is going on. So why would they be perceived as supporters of the old regime if they have already been displaced? Because that seems sort of counterintuitive, no?
Well, I mean, their political preferences may still align with what we would consider pro-Russian political preferences. The IDPs are not any more, they are slightly more likely than those who stayed behind to have different political preferences, but it's I don't think that shift has been as profound as you would expect, or perhaps as some are expecting. Yes, there is some socialization of internally displaced peoples when they do move to the center or to the west of Ukraine. The majority have moved actually to other eastern parts of Ukraine.
That's right. As close as possible to their homes. That's right.
But also it's, they are the ones who are, I mean, as in the several surveys that I've seen on dealing with IDPs, and again, Zois in Berlin has done a few, and several people have done really great qualitative research as well, that we keep seeing that they feel like the state has forgotten about them, that the state does not care, that the power, that the parties and politicians currently in power are not taking care of their interests and are not concerned about them. So I do not see that they have been courted in any way by either Poroshenko or Tymoshenko or Zelensky. Maybe Zelensky is this wild card that we don't have great data on IDPs in terms of the polling leading up to the election. Mm-hmm. It's a particularly difficult group, as you know yourself, you've done research on this. It's a particularly difficult group to capture. Mm-hmm. So,
but it's about 2 million people, so this is not insignificant. So it'll be interesting to watch, because this is another thing I wanted to ask you, and you've already answered that, like some of the factors that are likely to influence the outcome on Sunday, things like voter turnout. I mean, I don't know what your research has shown, but polls sometimes are unpredictable. And there's been a lot of polling that's been done, a lot of detailed polling. But is there, you're an experienced election watcher. So how likely do you think that there will be some sort of surprises on Sunday?
I mean, surprises are possible. I don't think that we're dealing with, you know, maybe what we were dealing with in the 90s in Ukraine, where the polls were inaccurate or manipulated or unprofessional to a certain extent. Certainly, when we look at both the work of Keith, especially the work of Keith, I would say, but Razumkov and their consortium with also the Democratic Initiatives Foundation. This is a highly professional group of people, and their polls are absolutely excellent. So,
I'm not questioning the polls. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. It's just we've seen surprises in elections in the United States. Nobody elected Trump. Nobody expected that Trump would be elected, right? Oh. The polls weren't showing.
I think the polls
are accurately capturing public opinion as it is, but. Yeah. I guess it's impossible to know, so I'm not going to push you on that, but I'm just curious.
But I actually would like to say something about just that, because I recently had this exact conversation with my a colleague here at my department and my PhD student, and the polls in the case of the 2016 elections were showing exactly what happened at the national level in terms of a popular vote, which is why it's important to understand how voting will take place in Ukraine. They did show that there would be a Trump win, Hillary win, and she did win the popular vote. And if anyone bothered to look at the polling by state, even statewide polls specifically, they would have seen that this pattern was actually far less predictable and a tie, like in the case of Ukraine. So this is where it gets really important. The IDPs, whether or not they will be able to vote, and whether or not they will have they will be able to get their registration set up in time, or they have done that in time.
Legally entitled to vote. It's just a question of whether they, as you said, whether they did go through the procedure of registering,
exactly,
and whether they will turn out on election day.
So the first thing is, what have they registered in the numbers that would be
significant?
For them to have this impact in the election. The second thing, are they going to turn out? And based on what we know, that I don't believe that registration has been as high as people would have liked it to be, which is highly problematic, right? It's not a direct disenfranchisement of a large voting population, but there's something seriously problematic happening there. And they're highly unlikely to turn out. And amongst those who, amongst those who are saying they're not turning out, they're more likely to be in the East and amongst the IDP populations when data on IDPs is available, which I stress it's not.
It's hard to get that data.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears here a little bit. The election campaign's been a very long and interesting one. Have you seen any dirty tricks during this campaign, things that people have been doing to try to discredit the others, and maybe something that we're seeing as the election gets closer? Are we seeing an increase in tensions and sort of nasty smear campaigns, or perhaps things like One Plus One will be airing that show Sluhana Rodu, which stars one of the candidates. Is this illegal? Is this a dirty trick? Are you seeing sort of what the election campaign's been like?
So overall, I mean, that's an interesting question. I don't think this election has been particularly problematic in those terms as compared to some of the previous elections in Ukraine's history. And certainly in the 2 years leading up to this election, there has been a consistent and focused attack on the presidency of Petro Poroshenko by his opponents on both sides of the political spectrum. But yet, certainly, showing the Servant of the People TV serial, where TV series where Zelensky is a high school teacher that, unbeknownst to him, is elected to the presidency, which was actually quite a popular series.
Yeah, I know. I actually tuned in and watched it. It's not bad. I can see why it's popular. But yeah, like, I wonder how many people will realize, is this the TV series or is this the candidate on television? I mean, electorates are not that sophisticated, right? And this seems to me like a sneaky thing to be doing to try to improve his ratings even further.
Not even sneaky. I think it should be outright. I think there should be legal questions about it. I'm not a legal scholar in terms of elections, and this does not break the rules.
It does
per
not.
Se,
it does not break the rules, but it's sneaky.
There's a clear issue here, and you know the show is also available online to mm-hmm. watch. So mm-hmm. if people wanted to watch it, they could do so at any time. Of course, one of the major the channels to do this in the days right before the election is particularly problematic. This is hugely problematic. It is likely to increase his numbers a bit, but I don't think this is going to be a major shift. This is not going to be, he already has the name recognition. He's an incredibly popular actor and comedian, mm-hmm. very well known. When we think of political science theory, a lot of the reasons why people are backing him is because he's not the other two
right.
top candidates.
Yeah, he's the outsider.
The outsider candidate. Uh-huh. They have very high levels of disapproval. And the other thing is he has name recognition. Mm-hmm. So if Rutsenko, for instance, who we have not yet talked about today, who is...
Sure, let's talk about him now.
Yeah, this is my big surprise that he's still polling at around 8 or 9%.
I'm going to ask you to just remind our listeners who this is.
Right. So Anatoly Rutsenko. He is a former military officer, and he is perceived to be part of the opposition, the United Opposition, in Parliament. He has recently received the backing of other one-time presidential candidates, and he is seen as part of the opposition against Poroshenko, specifically in parliament. He is widely supported in the west of Ukraine, and he's perceived to be a pro-Ukrainian candidate and also fiercely opposed to Russian annexation of Crimea and Russia more broadly in its constant involvement in Ukrainians' politics and the conflict in the East. He is a tricky candidate because he's quite conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't appeal to the cosmopolitan urban elites as much, and which we have now in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't appeal also to young people in the same way.
Well, he's not charismatic at all. I mean, he's very smart, but he's slightly sort of stuffy older man who's repeating old messages. So I'm surprised at his popularity and that the other candidates sort of decided, let's unite behind him, because I think his winnability is low.
So well, I don't know if his winnability is low, to be perfectly honest. In runoffs, mm-hmm. If he got to the second round, he would stand a chance to win against Poroshenko and against potentially Tymoshenko, although it would be a quite close race. He would not win against Zelensky, according to the various calculations. But there's this question. He doesn't have the same, even though he's been in politics for quite some time, he does not have the same name recognition that Zelensky does. And so there are a lot of people that might have turned to Rutsenko. Was he more charismatic? And if he had a higher profile, mm-hmm. because his actual platform does align with a lot of the people who are looking for an alternative. And he is not an oligarch, oligarchic candidate, right? So if this Zelensky is.
Yeah. Let's speak a little bit to that point. So Zelensky as oligarchic candidate.
Well, he is perceived to be entirely backed by perhaps Petro Poroshenko's arch nemesis currently in Ukraine, and so entirely financed by a particular oligarch and his financial group.
Who also is the owner of the TV station where this show airs. So this is... that's been quite a lot of attention on that point. You've mentioned a few times that nobody's likely to win in the first round. There's likely to be a second round. For non-experts, can you just briefly explain Ukraine's electoral system? What does this mean? There's going to be a second round, and who's likely to win?
So if no candidate in the first round of the presidential elections, if no candidate receives 50% of the votes or higher, then there is a runoff election. And then the top two candidates who received a plurality of the votes, so that can be, each of them might be under 20% actually of the mm-hmm. vote, they go to a second round, and which happens within a month of the first round. Mm-hmm. And then the voters choose between these two candidates. Juan Linz, a famous political scientist, once wrote about the perils of presidentialism and that it's particularly divisive because the winner wins all. But in these kinds of systems, like in Ukraine, it's particularly problematic because the top two candidates might only net 30-something percent mm-hmm. of the general electorate's favor. That means the broad majority of the voters
is not represented.
And would rather somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then they are forced to choose between two candidates that they did not particularly like in the first place, mm-hmm. which I think merits a lot of conversation in Ukraine, specifically in the case of this year's election, where you do have, you know, the top candidate and likely to net maybe around 20% and the second candidate around 16, 17, or maybe close to 20. That will mean about at least 60% of the voting population of voters that did participate, not even those that weren't motivated enough to go out to the polls, but of those that participated, they will not have a choice between somebody that they actually preferred.
Mm. Well, I think you're right. Political systems are complicated and they're not necessarily as democratic. As you said, the U.S. election, the popular vote went to one candidate and power went to another candidate. Let's talk a little bit about foreign dimensions here. The Russian capital, Kremlin, has been watching this election. They've been making statements about it. There's also been some statements coming out of Washington. What's the foreign dimension here? What are the bigger picture, sort of outside of Ukraine? What are people thinking? What are people watching? Is there any interference in this election?
I mean, as far as direct interference into the electoral process, at this point, I don't think the OSCE has seen anything like that in particular, other than the obvious direct interference, which is the ongoing conflict in the mm-hmm. eastern provinces of Ukraine. This has been constant. And there has been some campaigning specifically in the Ukrainian-controlled territories of Donetsk and Luhansk provinces, where there has been some campaigning that has been the spreading of fake news and this sort of thing that has been ongoing for the past years. So there is very little to show that there is particularly direct targeting in the last few months of the election. There have been, as we know, there have been skirmishes in the seas, in the straits. We know that there is ongoing various movement in terms of the conflict in the eastern provinces. So there are these things, but they have been ongoing for 5 years. There's nothing mm-hmm. to show there's a particular escalation of this. You know, there have been some suggestions that radical right-wing organizations are getting funding and support from Russia as well. As far as I know, this is very difficult to confirm, but the possibility is there. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, I don't think the particular foreign context has changed much. Mm-hmm. So we know that. Russia is an aggressor state when it comes to Ukraine. We know that this conflict has not reached any real resolution in mm-hmm. the last few years. And we know that whilst there have been ongoing support from the EU, from NATO, and from specifically the US and also Canada specifically, we know that this has not been enough in terms of changing the dynamics on the ground. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, I mean, although the war is one of the top priorities for Ukrainians, clearly the top concern, so is corruption and so is basic economic deprivation that has hit particular parts of the country mm-hmm. in ways that we have not seen since the 90s. Mm. So this is something that I think has been a missed opportunity amongst all of the candidates, not speaking about these things in a more pragmatic and practical way. The corruption, not on the grand scheme, the millions and billions of money that is being siphoned around the world and exchanging pockets and all this that the millionaires and billionaires are doing in Ukraine, but the everyday corruption, mm-hmm. having to pay to go to school, pay for your exams, pay to get basic care in a hospital.
So it's the low-level corruption that affects people on a daily basis that I think is where a lot of the dissatisfaction comes from. Professor Onuch, let me ask you another question. The election campaign the election itself will be on Sunday, and Ukraine, as you've pointed out, is a country at war. Do you see any dangers on election day? Do you see any sources of tension that could escalate? Has that been part of the campaign? Are people talking about this? Is this something to worry about?
I think there's nothing like, let me try that one again. Mm-hmm. I think there is no actionable evidence that there is a particular threat on election day. But this being said, I know that the Ukrainian government has deployed various security services across the country for the purpose of the conducting of the elections. The OSCE has a massive presence, as do individual country missions to Ukraine, some of the largest we've seen, even when comparing to the 2004 elections.
And these are election monitoring, international election monitoring teams.
Yes, and so I think if anything does arise, we will very quickly know that it's happening. There have been concerns over the specifically radical right actors and how they might disturb elections in parts of the country. Mm-hmm. Again, this is not based on the people that I've spoken to. This is not something that is actionable, that it's perceived as a threat that is so significant that a particular series of actions need to be put in place.
Well, that's very reassuring. So there are tensions are there, but nothing terribly worrying. Professor Onlu, you've been doing some of your own surveys and research. Can you tell us a little bit about that, or is it too early?
It's a little too early because we're actually going to get back the data on Friday.
What are you collecting?
So we are collecting, well, actually, it's part of a really large project where we are studying what motivates and mobilizes people to either engage in their politics through voting or through protesting or leave the country through migration.
Oh, my goodness. And that sounds fascinating.
Oh, thank you. Well, we think so. And it's part of a multi-country project. So we're studying the national populations and the migrants of Ukraine, Poland, Morocco, and Brazil, mm-hmm. and their migrant travel to countries within the EU.
But we'll have to have you on once the data has come in. We'll have a special show on that. But just to sort of wrap up this election, pre-election sort of curtain raiser, is there anything you'd like to add? Because I've asked you a number of things, but maybe I missed something.
No, I think the main message here is that there will be a lot of people doing various vote calculations in their minds, a lot of voters over the next few days. They might not be voting for who they actually would rather vote, but in order to ensure another candidate not getting into the second round, mm-hmm. which is going to be interesting for all of us to watch. And the data that we're collecting is going to help us understand that better. And people really need to pay attention to who is likely to turn out and whether in the next few days, and maybe the 1+1 showing of Servant of the People will do this. Each of the top three candidates now really needs to mobilize their electorate. And this is slightly different electorates. So for Zelensky, these are younger people. These tend to be also young men specifically, and they tend to be less educated, and they tend to be in the center, east, and south of the country. If his team is able to mobilize enough of these individuals, then he's probably going to have the same result as in polling. When it comes to Petro Poroshenko, he has been courting the pensioners for the entire campaign, which is a really great strategy if you know something about voting behavior, because the elderly and pensioners are actually very likely to turn out. They're mm-hmm. actually more likely to turn out than younger people. So and he's polling particularly well in the center and in the west of the country. So perhaps his gamble on what I think is quite a clumsy campaign slogan about the military, the language, and faith of the country, mm-hmm. that could work if on election day they are able to mobilize enough Westerners and central Ukrainians, specifically those who are older. And when it comes to Yulia, she polls particularly well in the center and amongst women. And we also know that women are more likely to turn out to vote in Ukraine than men. So, again, if she's able to, in the last 3 days, to mobilize that base, she's also has then a higher chance to get into the second round. So this is what it's going to be all about. Bad weather can change everything.
Well, I was about to say, let's hope for good weather, because that also has a very important impact on voter turnout. It sounds like it's going to be a really interesting day for Ukraine. We'll be watching carefully for the results. Thank you very much for your interesting analysis. We've been speaking with Professor Olya Onlu from Manchester University. I'm Marta Duchok for Hromadske Radio. Thanks for listening.
Give me your hand and we will fly. These are lyrics from a song by Shoste Chutya, which means sixth sense. A band from Lviv. As Ukrainians prepare to head to the polls, perhaps the sixth sense might help with the right choice. Here's the remix, Let Me Dance version of Дай мені руку. Enjoy. Jean-Paul.
так важко знов розправити крила. Невже забула ти, ми зовсім не боялись висоти. Чи пам'ятаєш, як колись ми ще хотіли, як ми мріяли, любили політати у вісні. Цієї ночі ми з тобою підросли, а я не хочу,
а я не хочу.
Дай мені руку й полетимо. Вже опускає нас на землю. Закриті очі не дають тобі спокійно таліти. Ця ніч зробила нас сильнішими, я знаю.
А я не хочу, а я не хочу.
Дай мені руку.
Week, we'll be bringing you another topical interview with our host Bohdan Nahailo, so be sure to tune in for a new episode. And we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. I'm Oksana Smerechuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.